Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing. Yeah.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Unapologetically Black Podcast. How is everyone today?
I am feeling great. It's the weekend. Always excited about having some time away from work and just getting stuck in, spending some quality time watching horror movies with the hubby. Yasmin, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, yeah. Just working today, and I'll be doing some more work. But yeah, I'm looking forward to at least the bank holiday Monday.
Unapologetically Black. Getting into our fun fact, before we jump into you introducing yourself and sharing a little bit who you are, my fun fact today is, and Yasmin, in case you don't know, one of the things that we do is, Shan and I have this conversation all the time about steeping ourselves more into Black history and culture. And so every episode, we share a little fun fact for people who may not be aware of certain things. So given that Yasmin is on the podcast, I looked into famous Black supermodels and found out, fun fact, that Danielle Luno was the first Black model to grace the cover of Vogue and Harper's Bazaar. She was a muse to Andy Warhol and Salvador Dali. And she was actually a film star as well. And I think there's a movie coming out about her soon. So she was like the first Black supermodel. And I'd actually never heard about her before. So that's our fun fact for today.
Never have I. And I realized as you said that I need to do more. All I thought of to myself was Naomi Campbell. I feel like if someone had a gun to my head and said, name five supermodels or name five models, I'd be like, just kill me. Just kill me, because I can't think of any.
I bet you could. I mean, you could get Kate Moss. You could get Tyra Banks. You could get like...
No, but you're right. Now you've said that, Yasmin, yeah. I know those people, but that didn't come to my head. I was literally like, the pressure. Like, oh my God. No, but on that note though, if someone came to you, yeah, God forbid, maybe not say with a gun to your head, with some level of pressure they put on you, and you had to answer five things, like list five things, what would your five things be? So my five things might be like, name five soca artists. Easy. I could do that. What's like your special subject?
Name five soca artists, Jen.
Me? I don't want to do that right now.
Yes.
Okay, I could do Destra.
Yeah. Lost.
Matchel. Mm-hmm. Kez.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Kez. Montano.
What's another soap artist? Patrice Roberts and Drew, five.
Okay, I don't know the last one.
What would your specialist subject be? If you had to name five things of a thing, like five cars, five
black writers. Yeah. James Baldwin, Audre Lorde, Alice Walker, Afua Hirsch, and Chinua Achebe.
Okay, you'd be fine because you was riffing that off. Yasmin, what would yours be?
I mean, this isn't like in keeping with thinking of black things, but I am like a bit of a history nerd, specifically for like 19th century Russia. Oh. So mine would probably be like naming writers or something. Would probably be
my specialist subject. I can't actually verify them, unfortunately, because your specialist subject falls out line of mine.
I'm pretty sure I could. I mean, I know like Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, Turgenev, Pushkin, and Bulgakov. So yeah, I could do five.
I'm not gonna lie. If someone had a gun to my head, amazing. Like, well, my special subject is this. They'll be like, you won. Forget it.
Like, okay, we're good because they can't verify whether or not that was true. Yeah. So
we're all good. I just scraped it, but it's okay, guys. We're all winning. So Yasmin, it would be great if you could start, because we know a little bit about you, which is obviously why we reached out to you joining us on the podcast, but it would be great if you could start by just giving us a bit of context into who you are and what you do for the listeners.
Yeah, so my name is Yasmin Belma. I'm a model, asexual activist, writer, speaker, researcher, and consultant. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my work is centered around raising awareness for asexuality across different spaces and industries and platforms. And that's kind of allowed me to do lots of things, whether it's founding awareness days or opening pride festivals or doing stuff with like different platforms like the BBC or MTV or ITV or anything like that. And then kind of just like working with lots of brands and companies and stuff.
I was going to actually just ask up front, like you're based in the UK, but you do have a bit of an American accent. And so I just wanted to hear a little bit more about like your background, because Benoit is also like, sounds like a French name or like a New Orleans type background name. So I was just curious as to...
I feel like whatever theories you have are probably more exciting than the actual story. Because I am from Reading. I was born in Reading and I have a weird accent because I watched a lot of Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon as a kid, and it permanently messed up my accent for the rest of my life. So I have no good reason to sound like this. And the Benoit, I'm not French. I do not speak French. My family are Trinidadian and we ended up with a French name.
Do you know what's so interesting? Yeah. One, that your family is from Trinidad, because big up the Trinidadians worldwide. It's my ass. And then the other thing is, I have a friend that I used to work with. Yeah, shout out Mackie. That was my home skillet biscuit at work. And she has an American accent, but she was from Nigeria, born and bred. And I was like, why do you sound American? And she was like, I just love Disney Channel. And I'm like, I literally, up until now, Yasmin, yeah, I thought she was trolling me. I thought this was banter. And now you said it. I'm like, there's no way Yasmin, a supermodel, an activist, all these publications and things she's worked with, is going to come on the podcast now and be telling me lies. So now, when we finish recording, I'm going to have to message Mackie and be like, girl, I thought you was a liar. But it turns out,
justice for Mackie.
Justice for Mackie.
It was a good era. I don't know how old Mackie is, but if she's like my age, if she's in her 20s, and it was a good era of Disney Channel, Cartoon Network, and Nickelodeon, and I could see how it would indoctrinate a person into having an American accent.
No, it's a real thing. So in Jamaica now, a lot of kids, 4, 5, 6, they have American accents because... purely because of really? TV, yeah. And their parents have Jamaican accents. Like, we live in Jamaica. They're surrounded by Jamaican accents. But don't underestimate the power of television. It's crazy.
And to think that English people were freaking out over Rasta Mouse, thinking that was going to give All the English children a Jamaican accent. Meanwhile, in Jamaica.
I know, right?
What's your definition or your understanding of asexuality?
Yeah, being asexual just means when you experience little to no sexual attraction towards anybody, regardless of their gender. So it's a sexual orientation, but it's a sexual orientation that's not really oriented anywhere.
It's funny because I do a lot of advocacy within the LGBTQ plus community, and I'd never actually considered, I always consider sexuality on a spectrum, gender on a spectrum, but I'd never actually thought of asexuality as fitting in with that grouping. So I don't know how, I guess, like us who are not particularly familiar or well-versed in asexuality, is that like a common thing that you find that people just don't even acknowledge it as a real position to have or a real state of being?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of depends on where you're. I think within the queer community, there is awareness that because it's in the acronym, so people know it's there, but they might not care that much about anything beyond the Q. Is kind of an ongoing issue. People don't go that far down the line, really. You just kind of leave it at plus and it doesn't really go beyond that. I think outside of that community, there is an equal amount of lack of awareness. But in that case, it's sort of in the sense of not understanding asexuality existing at all, instead of just not understanding or not putting effort into integrating it that much.
Yeah. And at what point did you realize that you was, or what was your journey to identifying yourself as asexual?
I mean, I always say that I realized I was asexual when everyone else realized that they weren't. So like puberty, pretty much. I feel like, you know, there's a stage where everybody's acting pretty asexual and, you know, everyone just wants to play together and it doesn't really matter. And then like puberty starts and kids start fancying each other, wanting to go out with each other. And, you know, your sexuality actually makes a difference to your like social interactions and stuff. And that's when I was like, oh, okay. I don't get it. I'm not feeling that the way you guys are, but I sort of assumed it was something that was going to kick in at some point. But it also wasn't something that I wanted to encourage because it just seemed like a lot of effort, like observing my peers and their dramas. I was like, I don't need that for me. Like, good for you guys, but like, I'm not holding my breath hoping this happens to me. But then, you know, as you're like a teenager, it starts to become more and more obvious that you're not interested in the same things. And then it was other people kind of making a point of it, which led to me having to work it out.
So growing up then, do you feel like you experienced othering or like feeling different?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had that in like multiple aspects. I mean, writing, where I kind of grew up, it's a very diverse area now. It was not as diverse in the 2000s. Like, I was the only Black girl in my class when I first started primary school. I look at that same school now and I swear, like, most of the kids are some shade of brown. So that's definitely changed. So yeah, I always kind of stood out. And then I was also like the Black girl that was really into like rock music and heavy metal and like dressed in a gothic style, which I still do. But yeah, it was definitely a bit less acceptable back then. And I didn't feel like, I feel like growing up in the 2000s, I kind of missed the fun Black era of television. Like, I always say I didn't get Keenan and Cal, I got Drake and Josh. So, and I like Drake and Josh, but it's, you know, like I didn't get like Tia and Tamara, I got Mary-Kate and Ashley. Yeah, like kind of, you got the wider versions of the things that already happened. I didn't get Sister-Sister, I got Friends. So it's, I mean, not Sister-Sister, what's that show? Girlfriends, I got Girlfriends. Yeah. I didn't get Girlfriends, I got Friends. So I wasn't really seeing myself represented in most ways and I kind of always stood out. Yeah. So by the time asexuality came into it, I was like, oh, this too? Okay, sure. Like, what's the worst that people are going to think I'm weird? They already think I'm weird, so.
So what's your journey been like of acceptance then?
It was something that other people brought to me. I did not inherently care about what I wasn't feeling or wasn't doing. I think, you know, when you're in secondary school and you're trying to navigate that, like, I was busy thinking about my homework. I was busy, like, I was having, like, you know, you feel like your consciousness is awakened as you like leave childhood and enter the complexity of teenage years. And that wasn't even on my agenda of things to worry about, mm-hmm. but it was other people being like, what's wrong with you? We need to establish this. Like, what are you? Why aren't you doing this? Why don't you have a favorite Jonas brother? Why aren't you Team Edward or Team Jacob? Because this was like 2009. So this was, it was a very thirsty era of media and people really noticed that I didn't care. So the journey of acceptance was only really hindered by other people being like, this is a problem that needs to be resolved. And then when I discovered the terminology and I was finally able to answer the questions, even in my school, which was I went to an old girls' school, because I had this theory that if I went to a school with no boys and people wouldn't care about sex or dating, which was entirely incorrect. So that idea backfired. And but it was a very like bi-curious environment, I feel like. Like our school reunions to this day are at Pride. That is how bi-curious it turned out to be. And so even in such like a liberal space, once I had the language, which was quite easy to find out because of the space I was in and because people love to have a label and they love to have a niche, they were still like, oh, but not you though. Like, I don't see you being asexual. And I quickly realized it was because I was Black. Right. Like, that's why people couldn't compute that. Like, it would be no issue if I was white. So that kind of hindered the journey because no one accepted it once I had the language to articulate myself. And then instead they came up with theories as to what was really wrong with me, which were all centered around me being like psychologically or intellectually or physically stunted somehow was like the main assumption, which is not a label you want in a state school system as a Black girl. You do not want the main thing people say about you to be like that you're slow. So that caused a lot of issues.
You know, you mentioned labeling just then, and I feel like I think I've discussed in this podcast before the process of being like diagnosed with complex PTSD and anxiety and like getting that label and not really knowing how to feel about it. And you know, when it comes to like mental health, some people feel like it's really affirming and other people don't really want to be attached to that label. What was your experience like when you found out about the term like asexual and asexuality? Like, how did that impact you emotionally?
I mean, I wasn't really sure about it. Like, I mean, people mentioned it because this was, again, this was like 2009, 2010. It was like the peak Tumblr era. And everyone was like into social justice and LGBT stuff. And people had like the Stonewall stickers, like some people like gay, get over it, like stuck to their lockers. It was like that kind of environment. So that was what allowed me to find the term quite quickly. But when I was looking it up and I was going on Tumblr and I was going on YouTube and all these things, I was just seeing all these pink haired white kids talking about it. And I was like, okay, that's cool. But anybody else? Is it just you guys? That seems a little niche. Like, why is there one demographic of people talking about being asexual? Like, is this a thing or is this just something that you guys heard and just latched onto? Like, why is there no one who looks like me in this space? And so I was like, one, I can't use a label because nobody believes me. And two, I'm looking at this community of people and I don't relate outside of them specifically talking about their experience. Like, there's no other intersection that overlaps. So I didn't have that much of an attachment to the label, ironically. I think people see me now and they assume I've made that my everything. I spent like many years just dodging it and not using it and not and trying not to have anyone ascribe it to me and trying not to let that conversation come up at all. So I didn't really have like an epiphany, like, oh, this is me moment. I was like, okay, maybe. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. And also no one knows the label anyway. So I can't say I'm asexual and the conversation ends there. So it really wasn't that useful for me.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of kind of saying this to your parents, coming from a Caribbean family myself, I can only imagine coming to my parents and saying, hey folks, I'm asexual, and them being, what the fuck does that mean? Or, you know, as you said, people assuming that something is wrong with you. So coming from like a Caribbean background and just being part of a Black community, how was it finding yourself or you kind of telling people within the Black community and more specifically your parents, how was that?
Well, I think, I mean, and you'll probably know what I mean when I say it's kind of 50-50, because I think on one hand, most people in the community would not want their child to come to them and say that they are anything other than straight, or to come with like a label they don't understand. But at the same time, you probably don't want your teenage daughter coming to you saying about all the sex she wants to have either. So it kind of could go either way, because I think that was kind of like the complexity people had of it, because it's like, well, we don't know what that means, and it sounds like a gay thing, but she's also saying that she's not having sex and she doesn't plan to, so that's good. So, well done. I feel like people didn't really know how to interpret. Like, fortunately, my mom is very chilled. She never really made me have to conform to anything I didn't want to conform to, which is why I was the little goth kid running around listening to heavy metal. And so I feel we didn't even really need to have that much of a conversation about it, because I never pretended to be anything else. I never made a point of saying I'm asexual, but like if I had come home and said, "Mom, I have a boyfriend," she would have been like, you? But I thought you weren't like what? Like that would have been a strange thing. So when I was like, "Oh, by the way, you know that thing? There's a word. It's asexual, apparently." It was like, "Oh, okay. Anyway, let's watch EastEnders." Like that was like what it was. Like there was no, it was not like that much of a big deal for us, because it's like, okay, well, that's nice. Like we already knew. Yeah. So it wasn't really that much of a thing. But yeah, I think like outside of the family, I think it was kind of perceived as me just being well-behaved and being focused on my education, mm-hmm. and being like not fast and just being a good girl. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until like I got older and then it's like, oh no, like I'm not attracted to men. Like you understand, like that is, or women. Or anybody, but I'm not a well-behaved heterosexual. Like that's not what it is. Yeah. And that's when it was kind of like, oh, it's a gay thing. Like that then became more of a point of contention, because they associated it with pride and they realized what it was a part of. And then it was like, so there are some relatives I don't talk to as much anymore.
Yeah. You know, earlier on you mentioned that
fair,
when you think of like the LGBT acronym, people don't really think of what extends beyond the plus, with A being one of them, yeah, and asexuality.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting because when Leanne asked that question, it's essentially asking, like, what was your coming out story or what was your coming out experience like? And I think whenever people talk about the coming out story or the coming out experience online, or certainly in my echo chamber, it's only normally in terms of people who maybe might be trans, gay or like a lesbian. So I wanted to ask, like, through the work you've done and the activism that you are actively doing as well, is that quite a common experience that people don't really feel like they have to come out, or they don't really, or they kind of get like a more of a positive reception? Like, what is it like on a more general basis?
I mean, you definitely have to come out. It's just I can say like I came out 100 times. I just didn't come out successfully.
Right.
That is the distinction. If you say to somebody, "I am gay," they might not like it, but they're probably going to believe you.
Right.
If you say, "I'm asexual," they'll go, "No, you're not." And then it's like, well, I don't know where the conversation goes from here. So that was not successful. And that was kind of like my experience, was I did have to come out because people assume you're straight by default and then notice when you're not doing straight things. And thus you do have to come out. Mm-hmm. But people won't believe you when you do come out. And that is the problem that lots of asexual people have, is like, we are doing it, we are saying it, people don't believe you, and then the reactions you get are not positive, and then that just makes you not want to do it anymore. So then I just kind of went back into the closet and did not mention it for as long as possible, until like I was like 22 or something.
I can actually imagine like this also in terms of having multiple times, as you said, like if you go to the club or if you go to a bar and like guys or women are hitting on you and you're like, "Not interested, I'm asexual." I can see, just like when a guy asks, you know, me or Rashan for their number and we're like, "Actually, I have a boyfriend," or "Actually, I'm not interested." They just don't believe you. And so I'm interested to know what the world of dating or not dating has been like for you. And actually, what does that even look like? Because I'm assuming, I don't want to make any assumptions. Like, is there a distinction for you between intimacy and sex? Like, what is your interpersonal relationship like in general?
Yeah, I mean, I don't date. I'm a romantic as well, so I don't experience romantic attraction either. That's not an asexual thing. That's just a coincidence. Mm-hmm. There are people that are asexual and do still date and have romantic relationships and stuff. I just I've never been so inclined. And similarly, there are people that are aromantic that aren't asexual. So I just happen to be both. So yeah, I've never had any interest or inclination towards that. And it was funny because I was speaking to a childhood friend that's known me since we were both like in nursery. And she has memories of me that I do not have. And she was saying that even when we were little, like we saw like this pretty house one time. And she was like, oh, one day, like I could live there with my husband. And I was like, yeah, and I could live there as your roommate. And like, I never, like even from like toddlerhood, it never computed. Like that was never in my consciousness, and I don't know why, but that was just like, even when I saw relationships around me, all the media geared towards young women always ended up with romantic relationships. And I was like, yeah, that's nice, but that's not what I'm going to be doing. Like it never computed. So yeah, for me, it's been more, I feel like that's actually like, I feel like it's a positive for me. Like I love having all this extra time. Like I do not depend on someone's romantic interest in me to make me like fulfilled as a person. And I feel like a lot of people do get caught up in that. Like some people find being single very stressful and they don't feel fulfilled, or they don't feel like a complete person, or they don't feel like they've achieved enough if no one's like in love with them. I think especially women. And I'm like, I've never had that. Like I'm a complete person regardless. So I feel like having that and like never wanting or feeling like I needed that has always been quite a positive. It's just, I guess other people kind of find it quite baffling. But for me, it's always just been like a very natural thing.
It's definitely interesting. I feel like I'm married, but I love being single. And Shan will tell you, I love spending time alone. And it's interesting because I think we always talk about this on the podcast about being whole with yourself and being complete with yourself. But, you know, there are things societally that hinder us as Black women. And we talk about microaggressions in the workplace and so on. In terms of your advocacy work, if you could talk a little bit about that and what does it look like to raise visibility about asexuality, but what are the societal changes that need to take place in order to make accommodations for the asexual community?
Yeah, I mean, as I sort of said before about how I spent like so many years like avoiding the conversation, I became such an expert in avoiding the conversation. So the turn my life has taken is quite ironic to me. Because I think, you know, people think that like, you know, I've made asexuality my whole personality and that was always the most important thing to me. And that's what I was always very loud about when I'd actually like people believing me did not come until my work was like in the news. That is what finally convinced people. So there was like not really much of an in between being like out personally and out publicly and then being an activist and then being a public figure and then being like the go-to person for this and then getting the backlash for that. Like everything kind of came at the same time. Like I just finished like my master's degree in crime science thinking I was going to go on to do something in that area. And then I ended up doing all this. So it was all quite an interesting path for me. And it's been, I think it's been very fulfilling and it's been successful. Like I've managed to do things that like nobody else is doing and like get the ball rolling, taking the conversation away from just awareness, which is where it's kind of been stuck for the past like 30 years or some might say hundreds of years in terms of when we first started like documenting asexuality. I've been trying to push it into being more about issues that are facing the community and about legislation and about recognition and all those things instead of just like, what is it? Which has been really good and very productive. But then because of who I am and how I look and the intersections that I have and what I mentioned before with the phenomenon of when you look up asexuality, it's very much people that all look the same and none of them look like me. And there's a reason for that. That is the preference that people have when it comes to receiving that information. They prefer a white person to be saying it. They prefer a certain age from a certain country or a certain look, and it's not mine. And so
that kind of complicated it, because I knew, like, from as soon as I started doing things, I was like, this is going to be a rough ride. People are not going to receive this well, and they do not. But I think that fortunately, by having grown up being perceived as being so unusual, it made me very thick skinned. Right. So now, like, those kind of things don't really, like, they really just roll off me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I always say, thank God I got bullied in school, because it meant that now as an adult, I'm like, whatever, to pretty much everything.
But through that, I guess, with activism, because even like with myself and Liam, with the work we do, sometimes it gets like quite tiresome. So even though you might have that level, that layer of thick skin to be like, thank God for the bullying, what do you do as a way to preserve like your mental health, or as a way to practice self-care through the work that you do?
I just try and do things that are like completely unrelated, because I think for me, it's a weird phenomenon when you're sexuality or your identity becomes part of your job and your community becomes part of your audience. There really is not a lot of there's like the lines get very blurred. There is not a lot of distinction. You can never really not be working or not be representing something, because regardless of where I am or what I'm doing, people will associate me with that thing and attach me to a whole lot of other things. Mm-hmm. And so all I can really do is just every now and then just try and do something. Like, that's why my like special interest is Russian literature, because it has nothing to do with me. Like, it has no cultural similarities whatsoever. It's like, I want to read something where I am a white guy in the 1800s who is working as just doing something completely different. Mm-hmm. Like, that is pure escapism for me. Or just like playing a lot of computer games where I like, especially Sims. I love Sims. Oh, I love and them. I make them do things I do not do. My Sims are like horny party animals. They're always dating and cheating on each other, yeah, and throwing house parties and buying expensive things, which I'm not doing. And like, I'm like this, and they're always swimming. And I'm like, I don't even do that. So I'm like, this is escapism for me. So yeah, I just like to do things like that, and just like kind of, that's why I live in Reading and I don't live in London, because I would be so in a bubble. Yeah. And it would be so all consuming. I love being able to just like do the thing and then get the train out and go back to like reality, kind of. That's kind of my only wellness techniques, yeah, for me.
But it seems to be working, hopefully. And how did you fall into, maybe you didn't fall into it, how did you get into activism and the work that you do? Was there like a moment or an experience that you had and you was like, actually, I want to do more to create change here? Like, what was it like for you?
I guess for me, it was because I started doing modeling when I was about 18, not because I thought I was particularly cool or particularly pretty, actually for the opposite reason. I was very conscious that I have an alien shaped head, and I thought I could be one of those weird looking models that you see, not the pretty ones, the odd ones. So that was kind of what intrigued me, because I, as an only child, I had done every single hobby you can think of, and I was like running out of things. And because of that, that was kind of why I joined Instagram, because you have to be on Instagram and you have to be online and you have to post your portfolio and you have to post your work. And that kind of sort of reconnected me to social media in a public facing way. Like, prior to that, like as a kid, I had had Bebo, may it rest in peace. And I had Facebook for like people I knew from school. But it was through that where I was kind of, you know, the algorithm knows, and it started showing me asexuality related things. And I hadn't really looked at that in many years, not since I was like 15. And I was like, oh, it's exactly the same. Like, nothing has changed. It's the same faces. It's the same people. It's the same conversations. Like, that's weird. Because at the same time, like, if you think about like the trans community, for example, similar population size as the asexual community, the conversation surrounding that has changed drastically from like 2012 to like 2020. So like, it's been like everyone's consciousness and awareness and the discussions have changed drastically. And I was like, why is asexuality just stuck in the same place? And I was always thinking, well, I guess somebody at some point will represent it in a way that I can relate to. I just got to sit back and wait. There'll be some black person that'll do it. And then after a while, I was like, they're not. And why don't I just do it? Yeah. Because I'm already on social media anyway. Like, I would write articles about diversity and modeling and in fashion and about representation and about how important it is and all those things. And I'm like, And I'm literally sitting here doing nothing, waiting for somebody else to solve this representation issue in this area. So I was like, why don't I just do it? And I mentioned it thinking it was just going to be like a fun fact. I did not think it was going to turn into anything. Otherwise, I would have said it years ago. But yeah, that was kind of like what motivated me to do it. I was like, I can't sit around waiting for somebody else to do the thing that I could just do it myself. Like, why not? What's the worst that could happen?
And what's been some of the highs and lows of your journey so far?
I mean, I feel like the highs are just, I guess, doing things that I like didn't really see coming. Like, I know that if I had gone on to pursue a career in like crime prevention, I would not have been able to do lots of the fun things that I've got to do, or be able to like have people, I mean, maybe if I'd done crime prevention, this might still happen, but have people come up to me and say, like, you doing that helped to change my life, helped to change my relationships with myself, my family, my partners, my friends. Like, that happens a lot. I really appreciate that. And being able to do things like I was opening New York Pride last year. Like, that was my first time in New York. And I feel like in a parallel universe, I am a New Yorker with an English accent. That is my theory, because I adapted so well to that crazy city. And I know that when my grandma was like picking places to move to, she had two choices, New York City or Reading. And for some reason, she chose Reading.
No way.
And so I feel an affinity for New York. And like being able to go there and be part of that, and like, we got in the route, we were on the back of, I was like sitting on the back of a Jaguar being driven through the route, and we went past the original Stonewall Inn where everything started. And I was like, this is so poignant and crazy that I am doing this right now. And it's just been like lots of moments like that where I'm like, this is not something I ever saw coming for me. And it's also something that I know no one else saw coming for me, because as I said at school, the assumption was that I was slow and I was never going to achieve anything. And they were very open in saying that back then. And so, and now all those people are following me on Instagram and they're super fans and they're like, we're so proud, you're so amazing. And I'm like, yeah, I remember what you said back then.
When the enemies and the ops become your fans. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Follow me. Get my engagement up, baby.
I'm like, you know, enjoy the show, because y'all did not think it was going to be one. So yeah, things like that have been very fulfilling. Like all the time, whenever like I get an email, I'm like, I did not see that coming. That is very cool. But then also you kind of have to deal with the, like every time I do something, whether it's big or small, people will hate it. Like it's reached a point where like, if it's a day where I don't get some hate comments, I'm like, this is a weird day. Like this has become like such a common occurrence. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have to deal with that, just like just getting that negativity all the time, like just constant mocking and degrading stuff on a daily basis, which it tends to trickle in, and then it will come in like a burst where it will just be like, here's thousands for like 4 days. And then it will kind of calm down again, and it'll just be like a few a day, and then it will go crazy again. So yeah, you kind of got to be good at dealing with that, which fortunately I am. So yeah, it's just, I feel like, yeah, that's one of the complicated things. And also just like, I don't know, I guess just processing, like it's such a weird situation. Like I literally cannot find anyone that is in the same situation for asexuality. Like it's such a weird position to be like the face of something. So yeah, like that aspect, just sort of overcoming that weirdness to myself is also a strange thing.
Right. No, obviously, I know that you've launched or co-founded International Asexuality Day, which is on April 6th. For people who don't know, you have the platform, This Is What Asexual Looks Like movement, or the hashtag. Are there specific, for people who are interested in supporting, are there specific policy agendas or issues that you're trying to address right now? And how can people come out and support what you're doing?
Yeah, so I back in 2021 I partnered with Stonewall, and we have an asexual rights initiative together, and we recently released a report into asexual experiences and discrimination in the UK, because I knew that like we can't start campaigning for anything until we get that out there, because people have no idea what I'm talking about when I say that. So that was like the first hurdle we wanted to do. So that's a very good frame of reference if you just want everything like concisely put with examples of how these things work, because we are not recognized under the UK Equality Act in this country. The Equality Act is very specific in its phrasing. to have a sexual orientation and to be protected means you must be attracted to men, women, or both. That is the criteria. There's no neither, which is weird because for religion, for example, you could have no religion and that is protected. But for sexuality, that's not the case. So we do not have the same protection by hate crime laws. We can still be medicalized. You can still try and cure asexuality. And that is an okay thing to do because it's not a protected group. Our conversion therapy rates, like our chances of being offered or undergoing conversion therapy, is 10% higher than like most other sexual orientations. And lots of people do not realize that that is still a thing. And it's mainly a thing through healthcare. So those are the things that like I've been very intent on not just raising awareness of, but trying to combat. And I've been meeting with lots of MPs this year and doing some work within the NHS and like trying to like combat those issues. So if anyone wants to know more about that, I would definitely suggest type in just like ACE in the UK or Stonewall ACE report or Yasmin Benoit report, and it will come up because that's like a really good starting point. We have lots of suggestions in there for like how people can be allies or things you could implement in your own workplace or just in your own daily life.
For people who are listening, for people like us who this is, well, for me, this is definitely like my first time speaking with someone who is asexual. How can we be better allies, or how, what can we do to show up for people who are asexual more?
I think a good starting point is to go beyond the plus in the acronym, because everybody puts all the energy into the first four letters and then they just forget. And it, and asexuality, like it connects to all of that. I think if you're having conversations about sexuality that don't include asexuality, then you're only getting half the conversation. Mm. So just expand that outlook and also like apply it to yourself, because like often when I speak about asexuality or being aromantic, people like, I don't get how you can be that. I don't get how someone could be asexual but still date. I don't get how someone could like still have a sexuality but not have it directed towards anybody. Like, surely that's a libido issue. Surely that's this. Surely that's that. And it's like, if we all take a moment to unpack our own understanding of sexuality, or to see that like, you know, your libido does not necessarily have anything to do with who you're oriented towards, or to see that your romantic attraction is not necessarily the same as your sexual attraction, that these things can develop differently. They might be directed in different ways. Just like incorporating those ideas into yourself will then make it feel a lot more natural when you do encounter the subject of asexuality or people who are asexual. And then that will just kind of help to like normalize it or usualize it within the conversations.
For people listening who are unaware, and I'm quite happy to say it, but Yasmin, if you want to, what is the full acronym? Like, where, how far along does it go?
Ooh, that's a question. I mean, there are like so many pride flags. So you can take the acronym as long as you want, but it can... On the most part, people say LGBTQIA+. Some people say LGBTQIAAAP2S+. Like, because some people do not want... Some people want pansexuality to be its own thing instead of sort of branching it under bisexuality. Some people want to differentiate between being transgender or non-binary and being agender, for example. So they want separate letters for that. Some people think that aromantic and asexual, even though they both begin with A, should be separate in the acronym. So that could be many A's. Two-spirit, most people kind of group that under the T. Some people do not want to group that under the T. So then that becomes its own thing. And so the acronym can get very, very, very long. But the abbreviated version, most people just say, and I don't mind people saying LGBT plus or LGBTQ plus, as long as the actual actions implement beyond that. Yeah. I don't really mind what people say. Half the time I just say queer just as a catch-all for everything. So yeah, I don't really mind too much, but yeah, the acronym can be very long.
But the actions need to be comprehensive in nature.
Yes. I always say like, I'm not a huge semantic person. Like, I don't really mind. Like, if I'm somewhere and they have the Philadelphia flag, but they don't have the new version that has the triangle on it and whatever. I'm like, I don't think, ooh, they're not doing the thing. I'm like, well, they might still be a very inclusive environment regardless. Mm-hmm. Or if they have the normal rainbow instead of the rainbow with the black and brown, I'm not like, oh, they must automatically be racist. Like, they might be doing the thing and have just not had that flag available to order right now.
Yeah.
Like, there are, I care more about the actions rather than just like what people say or how people like present it.
Well, Yasmin, thank you for joining us through your busy schedule and all the amazing work you do on the podcast. I feel like it's definitely given myself and probably people listening a lot of food for thought and things to consider, and definitely has introduced me, I suppose, into the world or the community of asexuality, because I think for myself, that wasn't something that I maybe have like insight to. And I think given the work that I do, I think it's important that I'm have more of a broader perspective of the intersection of what it means to be Black. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We'll certainly link the report into our description for this episode so that people can give it a read.
Thank you very much. That would be great.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Woman CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Woman across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.